Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
This is I Heard Eagles podcast, and the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by WynnBET. WynnBET is now live in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Louisiana, Michigan, New Jersey, New York, Tennessee, and Virginia. From boosted same-game parlays to live in-game odds, WynnBET has what you need to win. Sign today, bet $100, and get a $100 free bet at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WynnBET. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/WYNNBET. Welcome, everyone, to the Die Hard Eagles podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. I'm Sean, stacking the money green with my fellow diehards, Rob and Justin. And the Eagles are 11-1. A.J. Brown, 11. Jalen Hurts, the one, combining for the 11-1 record. Even as an Eagles homer, admittedly, I did not see this coming, this start to the season, this and even second half of the season. There's been a narrative where, you know, the haters, of which there are many. I mean, some of these power rankings still don't have the Eagles number one. It's insane. Last week, the narrative was, oh, hey, all the Eagles did was run the ball. You can't win that way in the playoffs. You can't win that way in the National Football League. Wait till they play the Titans. The Titans are going to run all over them. They're not a physical team. They can't throw the ball. And then we come out and we throw the ball. For me, like, the thing that jumps out of this Titans game is that the Eagles keep they can win in different ways, and this highlighted it. Like, they can win with the pass game. They can win even defensive struggles when the defense plays really well and gets them the turnovers. They can win games like Green Bay where it's kind of a shootout, but also they run the ball a ton. To me, that was the highlight of the Titans win. What about you, Rob?
Look, I'm focused on the offense, and yeah, I mean, can they win by taking advantage of what the defense has given them? I mean, 2 weeks ago, they ran, you know, they were able to run like crazy. They took what the defense gave. They scored. They won. You know, this week they came in and they threw the ball. So, I mean, clearly the weapons are there on both sides of the ball. And, you know, there's going to be games when we're more balanced. But, you know, knowing that we can shift to one or the other, I mean, how does a team, you know, going down the stretch, how does a team prepare for that? You can't just say, oh, we'll stop the run. Okay, well, they're going to pass. You can't say we're going to make Hurts beat us with his arm. Okay, they'll beat us with the legs. So, yeah, we can absolutely win like this. And I think a lot of teams would like to be able to win like this.
Yeah, it's nice to know that we have that versatility, and you keep seeing it game in and game out. And, I mean, it's just a big credit to Sirianni overall. And then, you know, offensive coordinator in Steichen, and then Gannon there on the defensive side of the ball to have the team to be able to assemble the team that we have. And definitely with Steichen being able to tee it up however we need to, whether it be running the ball is great to see, as well as passing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just awesome the way it's come around. And it's crazy. I think, and maybe this is insane, but it does feel like the Titans fired their general manager during the middle of the season, even though they're winning the division. Now, granted, they've kind of been disappointing, but it feels like they fired their general manager because A.J. Brown made the franchise look so bad. I mean, is that am I crazy by seeing that?
No, I mean, Sean, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I was just going to talk about it, but this week was the ultimate, you know, A.J. Brown revenge game, right? I mean, traded, you know, in the draft. I think we were all elated, couldn't believe they would trade A.J. Brown, one of the, you know, I think one of the top five receivers, you could argue top three this year. We all saw Vrabel's reaction after the trade. Clearly, he did not look happy. Now, you know, I get it. Maybe they didn't think they could sign him. They figured we'll get a first round pick, and, you know, Treylon Burks may end up being a good player, but how do you give up a proven commodity like Brown? Certainly he came into this week with it circled on his calendar, and boy, did he deliver. 8 receptions, 119 yards, 2 TDs. He had that one stretch where he had 2 40-yard, touchdowns in back-to-back plays. Now, one of them obviously was called back for being out of bounds, wasn't a catch. So what did he do? He did it again on the next play. And, you know, I mean, looking at it so far this year, 61 receptions, 950 yards, 9 TDs. He's clearly going to be the first 1,000-yard receiver we've had in a while. Side note, Devontae Smith also is going to get 1,000 yards likely here. He delivered in the ultimate revenge game, and the timing of the Titans GM getting fired. I mean, how can you not draw conclusions that it's related to AJ Brown after he put up the show? I mean, I can't remember the last time a GM of a winning team, I think, are they still in first place in the division? Getting fired mid-season. I mean, I don't know what was behind this, but, clearly something's brewing there, and maybe it was a battle between the head coach and the GM. I'm speculating, but certainly there's something behind this.
Yeah, it's definitely intriguing. I am curious, what all was going on behind the scenes. You got to also think about the fact that, I don't know if it was 100% his fault either. I mean, AJ was unhappy, and you got to think, why was he so unhappy? It seemed like a couple signs did point to Vrabel. It definitely wasn't a good trade in the end. And as far as this game was concerned, I think you're right, Rob, with pointing out AJ Brown. But another thing to point out, is Jalen's performance this past week. And I think it's kind of funny, we're prime time the previous week. He ran with his legs. He had that amazing game against Green Bay. But this performance, I think, was actually the best performance of his career so far to date. And I was looking through, he had 4 touchdowns total, 3 of them passing. For a guy who couldn't pass, come on. Some of those passes were amazing. Not to mention, he had to throw to AJ 3 touchdown passes. 2 of them, unfortunately, only counted. But he was able to do it there. He had 380 yards. His completion percentage was the second highest in his career, 74%, which also matched, the max amount of passes that he's thrown in a game in his career, which was 39. So, yeah, if you get 74%, when you're throwing only 25 passes, that's one thing. But he almost threw 40 passes this game. And he's lights out. If you're talking about the way he's throwing as well, he seems to have it down where if the defender's back is to him, he's throwing the ball to the receiver if they're one-on-one. And it's nice to see. You saw it with AJ this week. You saw it with Quez last week as well, where Quez was able to, get around the defender because the defender wasn't looking at the ball and score his TD. So kudos to Jalen. He just gets better week to week.
It is crazy. And now everywhere he's listed as the second place guy for MVP odds. I mean, he's really nipping at Patrick Mahomes' heels, the great Patrick Mahomes, who, you'll never hear the media say anything.
Air Patrick.
Nice. Oh, yes. I forgot. When they called him Air Patrick, Tony Romo, I wanted to throw up in my mouth. It's like, dude, you reached the ball over. The whole thing, it's not like you took off from the foul line or whatever, the 10-yard line. He jumped.
It was also such a reckless play. I mean, it was so close to being a fumble.
Well, and he's very lucky that the pylon cam is limited at how high it can go up, because when that ball came out, who knows? Touchdown, but that Air Mahomes. Oh, come on! And he lost that game. He lost again.
He lost.
And you would never know. Like, of course, it's not his fault. It's not Mahomes' fault. It's Andy Reid or not having Tyreek Hill. Man, do they love to make
it. It's funny you said that, Sean, because on the radio today, I was listening to somebody talk about the Bengals game, and I was like, oh, wait, they won that game. I totally forgot. It is amazing. when Mahomes plays you, it's like the win doesn't really count.
No. It's all just about Patrick and the Patrick price and his discount double checks and what kind of stats he can put up and how he can scramble around in the backfield and hit up Travis Kelce. Meanwhile, Joe Burrow owns him. He's 3-0 against Patrick Mahomes. And there's no like, oh, yeah, Patrick Mahomes can't win the big one. He did win one Super Bowl, but still,
it only counts if Burrow throws a shovel pass to beat him.
Look at how creative they get. A no-look pass. Another one for Patrick Mahomes. It's like, God, you bet. Before we move over to the season stuff, two other things worth noting. Penalties. I mean, it's crazy. We had probably our best win of the season, and penalties were just horrific. They really have to figure something out. Jordan Mailata, I don't know if you guys saw, but he said, like, I feel like we effing lost because of how bad the penalties were.
Yeah, I don't know what it was. I mean, obviously it didn't impact the game, but it was frustrating to watch. And I mean, those are things that, okay, maybe week one or two, you give them a little bit of a pass because they don't really play in preseason anymore and they're still gelling. But, you know, at this point in the season, week 12, I don't know how those are happening. So obviously Stout's a great coach, and I hope he gets all that cleaned up this week, because down the stretch against good teams, we can't afford those penalties.
Yeah, I didn't get it either. I mean, the Titans, they got a good defensive line, but it's not amazing by any means. So, like, I didn't understand what they were trying to get the jump on. It seemed like Dickerson, even on one, was just unbalanced, which was just ridiculous to me. So, obviously, I'd like to see it now rather than in the playoffs so we can clean it up. But it also, I thought it was funny, immediately everybody was just starting to jump all over the Christmas album as being the immediate reason.
It was immediately, I'm like, oh, too busy singing Christmas carols to not get the snap count right, too busy remembering about Donner and Blitzen and Rudolph, can't remember the plays on two. I was totally that guy. It was really annoying. I mean, some of the ref stuff, like, they were clearly calling a very tight game, like both sides. There was some ticky-tacky stuff. Even
the
like
Kelce hold, was ridiculous.
Kelce hold was ridiculous. I think even like one of the two Jalen Hurts roughing were even pretty ticky-tacky. Normally he doesn't get those calls. So I was just, and some of that was that. But then other things like false starts, it's like, you can't even blame the ref on a false start because it's clearly just your fault. Bright spot, though, coming in, Nakobe Dean making his debut. Kaiser White went out with, looked like a calf thing, but we had been kind of chomping at the bit to see Nakobe Dean, and it's really seemed like he delivered.
Yeah, I was pretty amped about that. Sorry, Justin, but
oh, go for it, bro.
You know, I was all for him in the draft. Honestly, I wouldn't have been mad if we took him at the end of the first round. Second round, I was all for him. And we got him in the third. I was stoked. So, you know, we've been wondering kind of all year, is he just not getting it? Or are the other guys, you know, White and Edwards, just playing so well that he's not seeing the field? So it was refreshing to see him get out there to make some plays. And certainly it looks like the future's bright for him. So that's exciting.
Yeah, with what Rob said, I mean, same thing, and I think a lot of people were thinking the same. Hey, is he good enough to actually play, or what's the deal? And I mean, Nick Rawlins, the linebackers coach, has said, you know, it was going to take him a little time to get in the rhythm at the beginning of the season, and it seems like maybe it took him a little bit, but once he saw the field, man, wow, was he lights out for us. It was great to see him, and it kind of brings up kind of what I like about our season so far, is that the coaching staff has really created a great next man up mentality for these guys and gotten them ready to come in the game and just play to the best of their ability. I mean, not only Dean, you see Blankenship this game. I mean, I wasn't sure, you know, was the Green Bay game an anomaly, you know, getting an interception off of Rodgers or something, but then he got blown by Watson at the end of the game. But he really came in and he was hitting hard too. I think, Sean, you shared with us one of the plays he cleaned up. He came from about 25 yards back just to put a lick on a guy. So
yeah,
that was nice to see. Yeah. Oh, and not only Dean, I mean, Ellis got some reps at linebacker and he was cleaning things up. I think he had at least three tackles this game. And just all around, I mean, the coaching staff has been great getting these guys prepared. So it's just been a good season overall. And if a guy goes down, it seems like somebody else is ready to take their place. you know, with Maddox going out, Josiah Scott was able to do it. Stoll had a decent game, and Calcaterra had a catch, even though Goddard was out. So there you go. Sorry, Rob. What were you saying?
Yeah, no, that I was just going to say that kind of parlays into, you know, something that I was going to bring up, and it just kind of like the impact of you were talking about the linebackers, but you could also look at the impact of the defensive lines so far this year. I mean, obviously, in the offseason, we had a big signing with, you know, Reddick. He's really come on strong, 9 sacks. Hargrave continues to produce with 8 sacks. Sweat has 6.5. And Graham, you know, coming back this year off that injury, has 5.5 sacks. And, you know, the team as a whole now, the defensive line has 42 sacks, which is the most for an Eagles team since the 1991 team, which, you know, a lot of people think is maybe the best, if not one of the best, if not the best defense in Eagles franchise history. So it's great to see us getting pressure and getting sacks, you know, with the quarterback, with that defensive line. And it's good to see our big signing, Reddick, producing.
Yeah, it just highlights the great schematics and game plan involved with Jonathan Gannon. I mean, you know, you don't even need to blitz. These guys are creating sacks left and right. You don't need to blitz. And the D line is great. And then Robert Quinn, it obviously has been a massive addition. I mean, you can't turn on your TV without hearing Robert Quinn's name. I'm kidding. He's on IR. He literally nothing from him, but we don't need it. And then we got Sue and Linval Joseph, Jordan Davis. There was a big debate of, like, was he going to be healthy in time for this game? He was. He got out there. He's getting tackles. It's the D-line has just been dominant. It's
yeah, really and, awesome. And, Sean, we didn't touch upon it, but, you know, we shut down Henry, which is not a small task.
11
obviously
carries,
a big concern.
Yards. Yeah.
Yeah, so kudos to the D-line and the defense as a whole for that.
Yeah, it was amazing. It seemed like people were getting really frustrated with Tannehill, who actually only ended up with 34 yards. I think it was actually more than Henry, as you said, he had 30. But, I mean, if Tannehill is going to run a little bit on you, you'll take that if you're stopping Henry. It's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, there was that one fourth down where he ran. That was really frustrating. But if the Titans – if Ryan Tannehill is going to outrush Derrick Henry, you like your chances in that game, especially – on a bum ankle. And, you know, he's no longer King Henry. He's like Surf Henry, Joker Henry. Now we put him in his place. And it highlights for me, this is hands down. I think it's tough to even argue it. Nick Sirianni's greatest win as a head coach. Again, only 2 years. And you could maybe even argue that Detroit win, his first year was his greatest win, just because it felt like he was losing the team after that Raiders loss. He gives the flower speech. Next thing we know, the roots are getting planted. But this was just an awesome win, top to bottom, against a playoff opponent. And again, this is shades of 2017, where we were beating good teams by a wide margin. That's Super Bowl caliber team right now, and I'm not afraid to say it.
No, I hear you.
No, go ahead, Justin.
Go for it, Rob. Go.
No, I was just gonna say it's hard to argue. He's you know, things seem to be clicking. He's adjusting. You know, I'm looking for the record, but what was he, Sean? It's something like 11-4 or something like that since his flower speech,
yeah.
Which everyone made fun of him for. I can't find the exact number, but it's something in that range.
I think it was.
Yeah, I think it's like 14-4 because he's 11-1. It kind of comes down to, do you include the playoff game, and also do you include that last game against Dallas where they rested their starters? But it's
kind of hard to remember because I think it keeps getting reposted with every win.
Yeah, it really
exactly.
Yeah. All right. Let's head over to the preview against the New York Football Giants. Of course, sportsgamblingpodcast.com/winbet. Get in over there. Get your bets for the big game, Eagles at Giants. Right now over on WinBet, you can bet the Giants, which would be a bad bet, but you can take the Eagles laying 7, -315 on the money line. Giants are a 255 money line dog. Total is set at 46 points. For me, the big thing coming into this game, we talk about how Nick Sirianni had his redemption, had his turnaround. To me, I mean, this was the scene of the crime. This was for me, Jalen Hurts' worst game as a pro quarterback was last year against the Giants. Eagles, of course, are 14-3 since 2004 against the Giants. That was one of their rare losses. And Hurts looked horrible. He was throwing into double coverage. He was just making poor decisions. I think the ankle was also bothering him, like not as an excuse, but in the same way we saw a revenge game out of our good buddy A.J. Brown, I think we're primed for a revenge game out of Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you there, Sean. I mean, as we were saying earlier, I think this was his best game to date. And coming in to play the Giants, I mean, I think we got a good case to just blow them out, to be really honest with you. So the other thing is I just don't know how good of a day of a coach Daboll actually is. I don't know how concerned I am with their coaching ability. We know their team is banged up. I don't have any faith in Daniel Jones by any means. So that kind of leaves coaching on the table for me. And I was just kind of thinking about it when it comes to Daboll, and a lot of people praised the hire. And then obviously they started off hot and they like Daboll. But now that I'm looking more into it, I mean, the Bills, yeah, maybe they've slowed down a little bit this season, but at least at the beginning of the season with Dorsey there, didn't seem like they were missing Daboll that much. Also, you got a question, like, has he really made Daniel Jones better? I don't think so. I think they've just kind of seen what they got, and they're running the ball a lot more, which is, forced Daniel Jones to – or not forced, taking the ball out of Daniel Jones's hands so that he can't make the mistakes that he does. And if you are going to give credit to them, maybe you give a little bit more to Kafka, who's their offensive coordinator, than you do Daboll, because Daboll ran Tony out of town, essentially. He wasn't happy to be around him. And then you see the article, I think it was today or yesterday, there's players that are upset about their playing time, and now he's talking about how he's going to talk to them individually and private. So I just don't know. Is he going to be enough of a player's coach for these guys to believe in him and to continue to rally around him, especially when the guy doesn't have enough balls to try and win in overtime? Instead, he's going to kick it on the opposition side of the field. And sorry, I should say punt it to the opposing team on the opposition side of the field. So I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't really leave him. I mean, punting the ball instead of going for the win, although I do remember there was a game, and I don't remember the circumstance that happened with the Eagles, and Doug either punted it or kicked it, and I remember we roasted pretty hard on the podcast after that too. But you know, I don't know about Daboll. I still tend to think he's a good coach. It's his first year. I think there was a lot of cultural problems with the team, and he's done a good job of, you know, that team I don't think has a lot of talent, quite honestly. So I do think they're overplaying their talent, but the jury's still out. Let's see what he can do after a year or two. I don't want to write him off as a division rival because I do think he could still be a good coach.
Yeah, I mean, he got off to the hot start as a head coach, but I'm with Justin. Like, when you're punting, you're sending a message. When you're playing for a tie, you're sending a message to your team of like, hey, I don't believe you guys can get the W. If I believe you could get the W, I'd let you guys go for it here. I think, you know, that fourth down at midfield, you got to kind of believe in your team. And, of course, they did get off to a hot start, but – last five games, 1-3-1. Their one win was against the Texans, a game they tried to give away, although honestly, obviously we didn't do great against the Texans as well, but lost at home against the Lions, lost pretty convincingly in Dallas, and then tied the Commanders. If they're wanting to get a playoff run going, they really got to get to it sooner rather than later. Rob, you had a great angle on this game too, something I had kind of overlooked, but Miles Sanders versus Saquon.
Yeah, it's an interesting take. Yeah, obviously both Miles Sanders and Saquon, both Penn Staters. You know, Miles Sanders for a bit was kind of in Saquon's shadow. Obviously he was tremendous at Penn State. As a Penn Stater myself, I watched it and saw him firsthand. And then Miles Sanders came in and had a good year as well when he had the chance. And now we're in the pros. And it's interesting who's had the better season and who's having the better career so far. You know, both have had some injuries here and there. Saquon's had more serious ones, I think, at times. But, you know, just looking at this season, Sanders has 187 attempts for 924 yards. Clearly, he's going to go, you know, barring some kind of injury, he's going to go over 1,000 yards this season. 4.9 yards attempt and 9 TDs. On his career, he's averaging, which is pretty incredible, 5 yards an attempt, which is, you know, a great stat. Saquon, on the other hand, has far more carries, 242 attempts for 1,055 yards. So only about 125 yards more, yet he has about 50 more carries. He has 8 TDs, so actually one less TD, and 4.4 yards a carry. So, you know, it's interesting. I think you could easily argue that Miles Sanders is having the better season. And potential maybe to have the better long-term career. Saquon came in with all the fanfare as the number two overall pick, but certainly Miles Sanders is holding their own. I don't know what you guys think.
Yeah, I mean, you could make a case at times Saquon Barkley was better than Miles Sanders, but certainly right now you'd be foolish not to want Miles Sanders moving forward. I invited Ryan onto the podcast, hadn't seen him. Oh, look, what's this? He's just joining us now, from the Sports Gambling Podcast. Giant super fan. You also know him from Living the Good Life syndicated radio network. Ryan.
Sean laughs, but he did enjoy the golf yesterday.
Yes, we were on a celebrity golf event with Living the Good Life, and we were synced up with a former guy who played for the Pats and the Jets, a safety. There was the Tim the Tool Man from Home Improvement. His sidekick was there. Peterman from Seinfeld. Apparently, Peterman's wife in real life is like an ace golfer and really carried the team. Rob and Justin, you guys would be happy to know. I probably had one of my better rounds of my life. It was pretty awesome.
108?
I mean,
it was a scramble.
It was a scramble. Thanks for having me. It was a scramble, and we used a lot of Sean shots.
Yes.
Way more than as Sean would admit that he expected.
I would have had it younger. I mean, we had five. It was a fivesome, and we used like my drives.
As long as there's no timer on him, he's good to go. He thinks a 5-hour round's normal.
Yeah, come on, that's normal. All right. Ryan, let's get your take. Saquon or Miles Sanders, who's having a better career?
A better career?
Yeah.
How do you want to measure that?
Yards per attempt.
I mean, then obviously you guys just you framed your beautiful argument as to why Miles Sanders might look better. He's never meant more to his team than Saquon. So if you're going to measure him that way, Kenny Gainwell, Boston Scott, Boston Scott's a pro gamer. He looks the same as Miles Sanders. So great take. it's a good angle. Saquon certainly slowed down, but if you're going to measure him MVP style, Miles Sanders is like the seventh most important player on that offense.
Ryan, it appears like this loss or sorry, tie, against the Commander draw, as you say in your vernacular, this draw against the Commanders. This was the first time I saw some chinks in the Brian Daboll is the greatest coach of all time armor. Am I right to say this is the first time I feel like Giants Twitter and those that are worshiping at the altar of Brian Daboll have been openly criticizing?
I mean, I think that's the problem. Just because it's a church over on your side of the river doesn't mean it is one over here. I mean, the answer is Daboll certainly did some things that maybe affirm some theories about what's going on. Does it seem to I went back and watched the tape, and I'll take back my comments from the recap show, Sean. I do think this was more on Daboll than Dan Jones.
Wow.
I think Dan Jones played well again. Think they're once again, they're just not letting them ride the bike without the training wheels. There's a little of that is true
in his fourth year.
What I don't get is he is successful when being asked to do the traditional stuff they seem scared for him to do. Once again, Darius Slayton, second in the league in drop rate, not helping at all. So, yeah, I mean, look, Daboll didn't the punt. It was probably a bad move, although They claim that they projected they were going to get the ball back with 30 seconds to go, just like they did. Still feels pretty cowardly. Not going to argue with any of that, but they still got the ball back. Wink was calling a great game with the defense. If I was an Eagles fan, I certainly like would be scribbling down in pen on my notebook. Oh, the pass rush finally showed up. Well, it's the first time the Eagles or the Giants had both their pass rushers. So the takeaway is that Daboll is still missed in Buffalo. I caught a little of the show earlier. Reckless take. Ken Dorsey clearly falling off the rails without Daboll. And I think to Rob's point, this is a team without talent. They are spending, I think, 63% of their salary on usefulness. And they're in the middle of a little bit of a rebuild, a lot of dead money. And, yeah, Kadarius Toney, piece of shit. What has he done with the Chiefs since they got him out of town?
He did get a touchdown.
It looked kind of cool.
For your reckless TMZ take about the
player being
unhappy, one player, Mr. Irrelevant, a linebacker who lost his fucking job because he sucks. He's not good enough to say free me. Horrible.
The article said several, by the CBS article I saw. You know, I think Crowder was in there or somebody.
Crowder, that's the guy.
Yeah.
Mr. Irrelevant, thank you for doing your research.
So, Ryan, as a Giants fan, what matchup are you most scared of coming into this game?
Boston Scott.
Okay.
I came with some data. So
it may sound like a joke, but Boston Scott does own the Giants for whatever reason.
Boston Scott has played 6 games against the New York Football Giants, Sean. Or Justin, or anyone can answer this question. How many games has he played against the Giants and not scored a touchdown?
Zero.
Zero. How many touchdowns has he scored?
He has multiple 2-touchdown games. I'm going to say
6. Yeah.
I think he has 8 touchdowns in his career against the Giants. What do you guys think?
I have no idea, but based on how you frame that, I'll say 6.
I'll say you said he's played 6 against the Giants, yeah?
Yep.
So I'd say 10 because he scored at least a touchdown in each. So let me say 10. And I know he had that one game where he had like 3.
Sean, you are incorrect, host of the Die Hard Eagles podcast. He only has 1 multi-touchdown game. He has a 3-touchdown game and then a bunch of single. 8 touchdowns is the answer.
I said 8.
Question.
Sean did say
you got that right, but you said he has multiple multi-touchdown.
See, I thought he had 2 touchdown games. As someone who likes the D-gen prop, I'll be giving out Boston Scott multiple touchdowns.
Love that angle.
And what about an angle that you're confident on?
Well, I mean,
you can't be confident in the offense.
And to finish the point, it's because those linebackers suck. The reason that Crowder's not playing is because of Jalen Smith. He sucks as well. Yes, certainly would love to have McKinney playing for this game. It just seems like the matchup that if I was an Eagles fan, they should be able to run the ball. As far as the positive matchups, you know, the Eagles come in with this massive, our pass defense, our cornerbacks.
Bradbury revenge game?
Yeah. Fucking tricks on you guys. Giants don't have any receivers.
Okay.
The matchup is that I do think.
We did just stop Henry.
Well, that's fine. But I do think that the Eagles have shown that they've done 2 things less than good this whole season. Defend slot receivers randomly and defending running backs in the pass game. Now, Saquon has not been good lately. Don't worry. They're going to have some gimmicks ready for this one. Because the real handicap here is not about a matchup in the X's and O's. It's not about the Jimmys or Joes. It's about the fact that the Eagles just have not had success about in New York. Jalen Hurts couldn't beat a shit team last year in New York. I understand you can argue it was a bad game. That was a horrible New York Football Giants team, and they still got the dub. I mean, you can look at how Dan Jones has performed against Philly. You can look at how Philly has done in New York since 2016. 2-4 ATS? Are we talking straight up against the spread? I don't know. Is this a gambling show?
It is.
So the Eagles have not had a ton of success in New York. I do think that if you're an Eagles fan, this is a horrible spot because all you can do is win. If you lose to this Giants team, it's a horrible outcome. No one is even coming close to suggesting they can lose. What was the spread last time when they traveled to New York last year? -3.5. What is it this year? -6.5. Disrespectful lines to an underdog like Dan Jones, who gets it done. This time he doesn't trip over his own feet.
All right. That now, trash talking by saying you're not going to trip over your own feet. That's why you know the Giants are in for a rough weekend. We're going to take the New York Giants behind the woodshed, 31-17. We're going to be able to run all over the Giants defense. They can't stop any running backs. I think Miles Sanders has a big game. But, Ryan, you nailed it. Boston Scott, player of the game, 31-17. And my prop bet that I want to give out is Boston Scott, 2 touchdowns. That thing is going to pay at least like 30-1 because no one understands Boston Scott dominates. Rob, what is your and Boston Scott obviously would be my player of the game as well. Rob, what do you got for a final score and any props or player of the game you want to throw out?
Yeah, I'm going 28-14. You know, not a lot of player props are out yet, so I'm just going to say Eagles over 2.5 touchdowns. I've been giving this out multiple times. I've hit a couple, but I still think Miles Sanders, again, I don't think it's the Boston Scott game. I think it's Miles Sanders, and he has at least one, if not two TDs.
Yeah, he's been having a great year, career year for Miles Sanders as well. Justin, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, Ryan can talk all he wants about whatever home field, all that stuff, and division rivals, all that. But I think it's just going to be a blowout, 38-9. I don't even think they score a touchdown with what they have.
Love it.
I think it's going to be so bad. I'm going to predict 3 turnovers. One of them is going to be a strip sack by my player of the game, Josh Sweat, who seems to be coming alive finally. He's had that high PFF ranking all year, but finally he's starting to feast, getting some sacks. So he's my player of the game. And I'm going to take Devonta for the over on the yards in this game. I know it's not out yet, but I'm going to anticipate that he gets over 100 here with what Giants have to offer on the defensive side of the ball for us.
Yeah, I like that. And does feel like Bradbury's due for an INT as well. Ryan, being the guest of the show, what is your final prediction and any props you want to give out?
Here's the angle. I think you would, if you're going to bet that the Eagles get sacks, they're coming up the middle. So whoever on the Philly defense is going to be running those stunts inside, it's not going to be the edge. Evan Neal has been great. He's back. Andrew Thomas has essentially been unbeatable if your name's not Micah Parsons. I think this, if they have any sort of success, honestly, that was my angle. My bet would be under the sacks for the Eagles. I think the numbers inflated. I think the Giants offensive line has played well, especially out on the edge. And if they can continue to get the ball out of his hands quickly, there's opportunity here. It's a low scoring game, Sean.
Well, give us a number, Ryan.
19-17.
Eagles win. Thank you, Ryan, for joining us on the show.
They don't cover it.
All right, there you go.
That's so much talk.
Oh, I didn't say who won, but you can infer.
Yeah, you can infer it's the Eagles. Make sure you check out Ryan Kramer on Instagram at KramerCentric.
Hell yeah.
Check us out on Twitter at DieHardEagles52. Follow us on Spotify. Toss us a nice little rating in the Spotify for the Die Hard Eagles podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. I'm Sean, Stack of the Money Green. For Rob, for Justin, go Birds!
Go Birds!